Okay, Ramblers, let's get rambling.
Now where it is now, everybody wants a piece of the market.
Oh my God, that is funny!
I don't remember asking you a thing.
I'm funny how? I mean funny like I'm a clown, I amuse you?
With all due respect, what the are you talking about?
Oh, I'm sorry, did I break your concentration?
What the is so funny about me? Tell me what's funny.
You represent the idiocy of today.
I did not know that.
English, motherfucker, do you speak it?
Are you listening to me?
How's my shit together?
Nice personality combination, hostile and intolerant.
So that's it then. No one else really knows anything.
Well, welcome back to Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Alley, just about one on the board. SP Futures up 16 and a quarter, and NASDAQ Futures up 175. We're trying to get back. So we have yet another reinforcement of the buy the dip mentality. We gotta make sure that we get everybody very well schooled in a investment strategy that, shall we say, can be somewhat flawed, but we've got everybody in it, boy. And I would say for the last, 10 years, it's been the thing. And now, it remains the thing. Yesterday was fairly obvious that was going to happen. We made a few trades regarding that, but I wasn't really piling too heavy because I really didn't know why we were down. I thought maybe there was some reason that I didn't see why we were down, so I was a little reluctant to pile in crazy yesterday. Kevin, how are you?
Doing okay. What's up? Calling you from beautiful Bloomington, Indiana this morning.
I spent a night in Bloomington, Indiana in my car.
Okay, there's a story to be told there.
Your buddies, there were a group of guys that had, they were Catholic kids from Cathedral in Indianapolis, Matty, and they had a church, the Catholic
Cathedral
church.
Cathedral being the one of the well-known high schools in Indianapolis.
So there's a Catholic church on the campus, and these guys, there was like a big addition to the church. It was a wooden church where there was room for probably, 20 guys, and the church would let people stay there from that didn't have enough money for room and board, I guess, and the campus was like a little dorm. Wild group of guys, shall we say. So we all headed off to this party, and somehow or other, I was the last guy to make it back to the church, and the door was locked.
Oh, God.
I didn't realize they locked the dorm door, so I couldn't get in, so I'm snoozing in my car. Of course, people are going by for like 6 o'clock mass looking at me. It was that good. It was not good.
Why were you the last one to the party, I'd like to know, or back to the church, I'd like to know?
I don't even remember. It was it's something to do with somebody from the opposite sex, but first it took me forever to get back there. I couldn't find my way back, and I needed gas, and there was no gas stations open in Bloomington. It was a rough few hours, shall we say.
Well, let's say when you give it the I don't remember, that's explanation enough for why you didn't make it back.
I do remember there was a young lady involved. And let's put it this way. I knew how to get back to the church, but when I dropped her off at her dorm, then it knocked me off my, didn't have, the ways in those days. So, anyway. But all's well that ends well. Finally, somebody wandered out early, and I realized the door was open, and then I went. So then
it wasn't the priest, was it?
Oh, God. No. But I mean, everybody walking by, hey, what's with this guy in this car? Well, it's a good question. What was with this guy in this car? Anyway, but Bloomington, all I remember about that place is this is back when Indiana was a major powerhouse in swimming. And I recall just driving around campus, and every place you looked, there was a swimming pool and a diving board, Kevin. I mean, it was like, seemingly, they were really into it. They were like the UCLA of their time back in the 70s.
Sure, yeah, they were dominant.
And
that was where you went if you wanted to be a swimmer. And, yeah, when I was over at the campus yesterday just to, check it out, take a walk, but, dodging between thunderstorms. The you know, they have a big outdoor pool with, you know, bigger, you know, diving platforms and all of that. So it's not all, you know, indoor stuff. They've got a lot of facilities for swimming still.
I'm not, being not much of a swimmer and clearly no diver. I have to think.
Are you buoyant? The question is, are you buoyant at all?
Somewhat. Yeah. Not bad, you know. But, no, I was never like a couple of my buddies that could actually just like lay on the bottom of the pool. I never do that. I floated okay. But, anyway, I would think that if you're going to be an Olympic diver, which is outside, that you'd have to have, of course, Indiana's, you know, in the winter halftime, but, that you'd want to have, it must be different diving outside than inside, I guess what I'm saying. I mean, you got to have some wind. I mean, there's got to be wind involved, right?
Yeah, you got to have a heading when you dive. You can't just go dive straight into the water.
Well, see, I wouldn't know anything like that. So, you know, was a good diver was our buddy Frank. He was a diver in high school. I don't know if you knew that or not, but man, that dude.
I knew he was a swimmer. I didn't know he was a diver.
Tell you what, when that dude hit the end of the board, he would go up so high it was unbelievable. I mean, one of the biggest things that makes a diver is being able to get up so high in the air off those springboards. I mean, some of those guys.
Yep, a lot of strength in your legs that just to get launched.
Yeah, I got a question for you. I mean, it was after we talked to Lou yesterday. We talked about someone. I mean, Lou's segment yesterday I thought was really pretty good. I mean, it always is, but it would seem like it was better than.
I was going to say, what, like for a change? Is that what you're saying?
No, I just. But I mean, it brought up several times, you know, not only in our lifetime, but since we've been doing the show, you get these questions, Kevin, regarding people's right to privacy and, you know, I guess the right of other people to, quote, know the effects of certain things. I'm not talking about your right to privacy, like in your house or in your bathroom or your bedroom and stuff, which I would hope it remains sacred, but even though that's not remaining sacred. He was talking about the organization that outed the tax returns of Gates and a bunch of other people. And it was pro something something. I don't know. I forget what he said.
Was it ProPublica?
Yeah, it must have been ProPublica. And while he was saying that, I've been sort of arguing with him the whole hour, which I love to do with Lou. The weird part of it is I never want to argue with Lou in terms of arguing because I'm fascinated by what he says. But I keep pushing him to drag more stuff out of his brain because there's always more in there. Does that make sense?
I know exactly what you're talking about. People would do that with me all the time.
Yeah, but, you know, it reminds me, here's my conundrum with this. Do I want a bunch of hacks, literally, hacking into somewhere or somebody in the IRS leaking people's tax returns? And I'm going to say the answer to that is unequivocally no. Do I want an Eric Snowden of the world, you know, leaking all of the secrets from the, whatever, Defense Department or where the hell he got them from? The answer is no. Yet, I also know that every once in a while, that stuff needs to be spilled out there because a lot of it shouldn't even be secret. I mean, what did Wayne say the one day that when he was at the NSA, the lunch menu was considered top secret, almost as a joke, but it was. I mean, a lot of this stuff, I mean, let's put it this way. If Bill Gates and 15 other billionaires aren't paying any taxes, I think that that's something, I don't need to know that Bill Gates isn't paying any taxes with his name on it, but I think I need to know that at the end of the day, our IRS code is so bleeped up that some people that have the more money than anybody else don't pay any taxes. Now, I don't know how you get there, and I don't know if you're the president or the head of the IRS who tells the president, and all of a sudden you have a meeting with a couple of beers at the White House of eight people on each side of the aisle, and you say, "Hey, here's this. We're all sworn to secret here. Here's 15 of the richest people, and by the way, the tax law that you bleeps have written has none of these guys paying a dime." And we better friggin' fix it. I mean, somehow or another, there needs to be action on that, Kevin. And I don't know what it is. I know it shouldn't be somebody hacking it out and spilling it on the inkblot Times. But I also know that it's a fact that needs to be known by somebody because something's wrong. I don't know where you get. I mean, the stuff that Snowden outed should have been known by people. Doesn't make it right for him to do it. But somehow or another, that was only being kept secret to save people's ass, basically. I mean, I don't know the middle ground here. I really don't.
Well, and there, you know, you also get into the idea of, you know, what's a whistleblower? Where, you know, how do whistleblower protections work? You know, and they work, you know, they require that you go through channels and that you get the protection. And that's where Snowden was off the rails, is he couldn't, you know, he took it right to media. You know, I understand how all of it works, but I think you're right, is, it is too easy to make information classified. So as a result, we get, too much stuff withheld from us.
Well, when I was a Ute, and
what was that word?
Yeah, what was that word?
When you were a Ute.
You know, what if we grew up in an area of the country where you absolutely couldn't say stuff? I mean, our buddies from Boston, they cannot. There is no R.
What, you mean like San Francisco?
well, yeah, but I mean, there's no R in their portfolio, their letter portfolio. They can't say park your car, park your car. An A.
The only time they use an R is when a word ends in a, like idea.
Yeah.
That's, then all of a sudden the R comes out.
But it's scary. I mean, they literally can't. If you say it's park, pack, no, park. I mean, whatever. But it is. I forget kind of where I was going with this, though. I lost my train of thought. Such as it was, it was a crummy little train. But it was
a brilliant thought too. I have no doubt.
Yeah, but I'm sure it'll come back to me. But yeah, you wonder what is this this secrecy stuff? The when I was a Ute in Evergreen Park, and I don't remember them doing this in Chicago, Kevin. They might. I was real young. There was I mentioned this last week. There was a newspaper called there were the Economist newspapers. There was a Southtown Economist, then there was a Suburbanite Economist. Mm-hmm. And the Southtown was for basically south of Chicago. It was we used to have one of those on the north side, Maddie. What the hell's the name of it? I haven't gotten it in a long time. Was it the Lincoln Park Times or something like that? And but anyway, the Southtown was a pretty big paper. I mean, it had real writers and all that kind of stuff. And it covered the Southtown, you know, businesses down there. And the Suburbanite part was the...
And it was a daily paper.
This was Wednesday and Sunday.
Yeah, okay. It was the Daily Southtown.
Yeah, it was the Daily Southtown.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, when I was younger, because I helped some guy deliver it, it was only Wednesday and Sunday. Then I think they went daily. I don't know if it was always daily. I think it was Wednesday and Sunday. Anyway, but once a year, when the tax bill came out, there would be this big, thick paper you got. And everybody in Evergreen Park... By address, not by name. So we were 2920. It was 2920's tax bill, 2924, 2920. They were all listed to essentially tell people or show to people that they were, quote, fair or at least even. And then you would look at them, and my stepfather, of course, being the accountant that he was, he would dig into them and he'd say, okay, you know, we're whatever, $1,500. And next door is, $1,650 or $1,625. Oh, yeah, well, they've got a garage and their lot is...
Well, that's definitely fair, yeah. Yeah. No, I know what you mean. Then you can comp it.
And, but nobody... I mean, once in a great while, you'd see an outlier where, gee, how did Joe manage to get that fixed basement by him or the garage by him? His didn't go up and he built a garage. That sort of thing. I mean, it'd be a very small, you know, why didn't Joe have to pay up $200 because he built a garage? That kind of thing. Sometimes, and the whole idea of trading in an open outcry trading floor, and even though it's totally poo-pooed, it's not electronic, it's not this. Fact is, everybody heard the trade. I mean, there are 50 people standing there. Everybody heard it. It doesn't get more public or auction market than that. And yet now there's people that say, how could you have ever done such a thing? What are you talking about? Explain to me now, if anybody hears these trades, that they sneak into 17 different exchanges and preference and kick back the money. There's no comparison into the, which was more, shall we say, out in the open, right? I mean, so I don't know what the situation is. I mean, somebody should know somewhere that at the end of the day, you know, Bill Gates isn't paying any tax. Now, if he's giving away, if he makes $1 billion, he's giving away $999 million to charity. I don't know. I mean, I guess, you know, if that's deductible, charitable deductions, whether charitable deductions should be 100%, I don't know. But I mean, if that's the reason and that's the law, at least we know how he's doing it, okay? But I don't.
Sure, but if the charity, if the not-for-profit is the Gates Foundation, then you ask that question.
Right. Is it the Gates Foundation are all getting paid? But then again, at the end of the day, if he's getting paid there, he ought to be getting taxed on that, right?
But what happened with the Clinton Foundation? You know, the Clinton Foundation paid for travel, paid for lodging. Well, Bill especially, but really everybody in the family lived a lifestyle on official business that was well beyond what would be the norm for anybody else.
Well, what do you think?
And all of that's non-taxable.
Well, I guess every single... When was the last time that the chairman of Commonwealth Edison picked up a tab that he paid for? I mean, I don't know the man personally, but... I mean, that was my big... the guy that was a chairman at CBOE, all right? And, he was a good guy. I mean, he's passed, and I'm sorry, because I like the guy. But, I mean, he came from serious family money. I won't say what company his dad was chairman of, or everybody knows what the guy's name is. But they had a ski place in France or some damn place, Austria, Switzerland, somewhere, wherever people, you know, I never had one of those, so I don't know where he, but he would go over there for 2 weeks a year and, essentially to go skiing and use the house. And he would have all these side trips where he'd take out, you know, the Merrill Lynch guy from Austria or something, and Sebo always picked up the tab, and of course it was his air flight over there was for that purpose. So I'm going to say his 2 week vacation and all the best places one could eat and whatever was probably 90% on the Sebo. Okay.
There's a lot you can do to engineer it. Heck, you could go, you may need to make a monthly visit to PTI in Arizona.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
And
certainly during spring training. Spring training is
while you do it. In fact, I think you need to take me out there to introduce around to Stocks and Jocks. And I would say that, except that I have family there, so I can go stay with my son for free anyway, and would, because I want to see him and my daughter-in-law. So never mind. We'll have to come up with a different boondoggle after we set Thomas up in the Caymans.
Yeah.
Then you and I'll make that trip instead.
Yeah. I remember we were to get a load of this. When we were at Mesro, with all these new stupid rules regarding, when once you do this, then of course they try and make rules, and there's always got to be rules. So my last test I took for continuing education, I think again, it's how dumb it is. If you give somebody a gift, I think the most you can give is $50. And most firms have a policy that if you get any gift, you got to like write it up. So, like, at the end of the year, at the SIBO, if somebody gave somebody, like, you know, a bottle of nice booze or champagne, the guy would say, I don't even want it, because if I'm straight and I actually got to go through the paperwork, it's not worth it. You know, it's just not worth it. Here, keep it, or give it to a clerk, type of thing. And, it gets to the ridiculous stage, but, so anyway, we get the guy at Mesro and Jimmy Tyree, who's, passed, which is, I still miss the dude, the nicest man I ever met. He had tickets on the Bulls, not by the, you know, the bench. Those guys, those are later. He was on the other side. The folding chairs were right on the floor. And mm-hmm. One guy sat on one side of the middle court, and the other guy sat on the other. He had two tickets. So, somebody wasn't using them on a snowy Saturday night. So somehow or another, they fall to me. So, well, not me. This guy calls me up and he says, hey, you want to go to the Bulls game? And I said, yeah. Well, you know, we're sitting on the floor. I go, okay, I'll go. he bent my arm with that. Well, so the guy gets this this horrible flu on Saturday, and he's not going anywhere, right? So now the question is, what do we do with the tickets? Because if somebody from the company goes with, I mean, if you take people to dinner, you can, I don't know if you can deduct 100% of it, I should know, but you used to be able to, and I don't know if you can back again with the last tax bill, whatever. So you can spend whatever you want and wine and, hot cuisine or whatever it is and pick up the tab. That part's fine. But you, if you're there, if you're not there, you can't just pick up some guy's tabs for $500. It's considered a gift. Right. So now this guy, Stan was his name. He's not going. So now what do we do with these tickets that are, this is 10 years ago and they were $750 a pop. But it's a real number. And, so they're waking their attorney, their outside counsel up in New York going, hey, what do we do with these tickets? Now our guy from Mesro can't go. Can we still get? Finally, the guy slams down the phone. He goes, just tell him to take somebody else and shut up. So my buddy Leary works at PTI. We got to go, and it was fun. I love chatting with the ref. It was kind of fun. Imagine that, me chatting. Because the first half, is the typical, during the year NBA half where nobody really did much. All of a sudden, the second half, somebody like really whacks somebody, and I go to the ref. I go, hey, it looks like it's time to go to work. He said, it sure does. That second half's a lot different. Off he goes to like make a foul call. It was kind of funny.
But I've never sat on the floor like that. I would love to do that one time.
Well, you can't get up with your own beers. So you better
make
sure. You
got a waiter or waitress?
You got a guy come by, like the fake tuxedo, and they run a tab because they don't want you getting up and
right,
working.
Yeah.
Which means you better not have too many, or you're going to the can at halftime, because that's the only time you can get up. I don't know what you do the rest of the time, but
yeah, that's a good point.
It was fun. I mean, it wasn't, nobody came flying over and landing on us where I could sue them or anything. But you're pretty darn close. I mean,
I sat right on the ice a couple times, really good seats, but never right on the floor for an NBA game. I've sat close at NBA games and I've covered NBA games, but I've never.
Well, were you at the press desk?
Yeah, I've been at the press desk a bunch of times at the United Center and in the locker rooms and everything. Back in the Kirk Heinrich, Lou Aldang, Ben Gordon days.
One of Robin's friends who she went to Northwestern Journalism School, right? And she went to the time she was working for Fire Radio, and so something happened to the sports guy, and so they tell her, you got to go cover the Bulls game, right? Well, this is back in the era where they were really fighting about women going to the guys' locker room because they said, to lock the women out and not lock the guys out was this huge travesty. Of course, never got to the point where guys could walk in the women's locker room, right? So, but the women could go in. I don't know if they do
well, but they didn't let anybody in the women's locker room. So that's how they handled it. They just came out to the press table.
Well, I mean, I would guess if there was a female reporter 25 years ago, she could have gone in the women's locker room.
No, they never did.
Was it because there were no
women?
That was always
the difference, and that was always the complaint, is that the women can't go in and get interviews in the locker room, and so it's an unfair advantage to the men reporters, where there was no advantage in the women's side because nobody got in the locker room.
Well, this girl, and she was really bright, and she ended up marrying some guy who ended up being the assistant producer of Hill Street Blues and something else. Anyway, real bright guy. And so she calls Robin up afterwards. She goes, God, she's like 5 foot on a good day, right? She goes, God, these guys are like walking by. Everything's like eye height. Because we had Artis Gilmore and those guys. What was Artis, 7'3" or so, 7'2"? Anyway, but she said it was interesting. Not anything she'd want to go do again, actually, but it was interesting.
I'll wait at the podium.
Yeah, I'll just wait at the podium next time. I don't really need this. But do they still do that or not? Or nobody goes in?
It's a good question.
I think they bring them all out to the podium now. And you know what? I mean, that kind of changed my own reporting for Notre Dame basketball, because they used to bring the players out to the, they'd always have four or five guys would come out to the players' lounge, and I could just have a conversation, because I really didn't write a lot about the game itself, and I was more interested in other types of stories. I could get some really good interviews that way, and some good material. Now they bring out two players after the game, before the coach, and they sit up at the podium in the press room, and you get to fire your questions at them one at a time. So I really, unless I can have time with my, and I have, because I have a real job, that's hard to do, unless I can get over to practice and arrange for some time with somebody, I really don't get to do good interviews anymore, which is why you don't see me writing up a lot of basketball stuff anymore.
If I had to guess, I think the policy has changed to where there's like a two, the players get 30 or 40 minutes to like shower up and stuff, and they're at least half dressed, and they let everybody in. If I had to guess, but I think that's the policy. That there's a
that sounds right.
That there's a period of time when nobody can go in, and then everybody's supposed to be at least have underwear on, and then you can everybody can go in, which is my guess. Because you'll still see guys like putting their tie on or whatever while somebody's interviewing. We don't see anybody before that, shall we say? With the so anyway, so Kevin, we had a huge down day yesterday in the morning, and we came flying back.
By the way, before we get away from basketball, real quickly, just. We're going to get an ND guy a championship this year.
Yeah,
it doesn't matter which one. We're going to get one for Connaughton, or we're going to get one for Monty Williams.
You know what? I think they're both very, very likable people. So I don't know who to root for.
I don't know Monty Williams. I know people who know him, and they love him and think he was a great. He's a great guy, and his wife, who very wife and child, he tragically lost in a automobile accident a few years ago.
Yeah.
Thought both of them were just wonderful people. So yeah, that's but he's done a really nice job. He's coach of the year with Phoenix, and he's done a nice job in Connaughton. I do know, and actually got to know his family when they were in town, because I actually met the guy's mother at a business event before I ever met Pat. You know, by months. She was at a local business networking event, and she and her husband Len are just they're really cool people too. So you know, good for them. And Pat, you know, I just think is one of the best leaders and captains you'd see on a college team, because he was always the guy that everybody loved, but he did not put up with, you know, you don't slack off, and people. You know, people would they wouldn't slack off, not because they were afraid of him, which was like a Ben Hansbrough or a Rob Kurz. You know, Kurz would just, you know, you want to slack off and practice? Good, he's putting you on the floor. But Connaughton was the guy that they one of the guys that they tried to please. You know, that if they could measure up to what Pat wanted, they were going to be okay, and that's why those. Teams when he was you know, his last year, that's why they were so successful, is because they had such good leadership.
Is that family from the East Coast?
Yeah, they're Boston area.
Okay, that's what I thought.
But he has he's playing really well. I mean, I thought he would. Quick question, we got a break. Do you guys think that the basketball choice was good? Was his baseball ability on the same level or no?
He was a fourth round draft pick, so he was a prospect, but not a top prospect.
Pitcher? Pitcher, right?
Fun question. You know, you talk about toughness. I asked his dad once, I said, does Pat pitch inside a lot? And he laughed and he said he tries to hit somebody every game.
S&P futures up 16, Nasdaq futures down 6. Be right back, Stacks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Harrell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Socks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Stocks, jocks,
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Al. It's Matt Weber on the board. S&P Futures up 19, NASDAQ Futures down 2. We're bouncing back the whole way here from the huge sell-off yesterday. The Dow futures up 230. Individual stocks got Boeing up 245. Caterpillar up 235. What else? We got JP Morgan up $2. Again, these banks are kind of fluttering around here, but they have not. Everybody keeps saying they're what you're supposed to buy, and yet they don't seem to. The XLF doesn't seem to go anywhere. It's kind of strange. Over in Europe, XLF being the part of the S&P, the ETF that's the financial part of the S&P. DAX up 147.9%. Now these guys were all down yesterday, pretty heavy. FTSE up 50.7%. CAC around up 111. That's 1.75. I think they were down 2.5 yesterday, so nobody's making it back yet. But they're to where they were yesterday, but they're a pretty good bounce. Asia, Nikkei down again. Well, they were actually, they might have been up yesterday. No, they were down. 177, 0.6%. Shanghai down 1. 0.04. Hang Seng was the one who was down the most yesterday. We're down like 2%. They're up 191.7 yesterday. I said they're not, the bouncing on the places that were down yesterday, they're all bouncing some, but not as far as they were down. Yesterday is a weird reminder. We ended up down 259 in the Dow. We were down over 500. S&P was down 37. I'm going to say it was down 74. The futures at their lowest, so came back about halfway. NASDAQ down 105. That was yesterday. Bonds up 5. Basis points to 1.35. Bund is up 1, which is to minus 0.29. Japan unchanged at positive 0.03, so they keep above 0, but barely. Oil up 83 cents, 73.77. That's a full 1%. Brent up 62, 74.74. Natural gas up a penny, 370. RBOB up 2 cents to 227. Gold down $1.20, back under 1,800, 1,799. Can't seem to get a rally out of gold here. Somewhat, it's bounced back from the, maybe 1775 it was, but just can't seem to get moving. Silver up 7 cents, 2606. Copper up 7 cents. They were down yesterday to 433. And we've got Bitcoin, which was down heavy yesterday. It's down again today a little bit, down 170. 32,752 was pushing 35,000 on, I'm going to say Wednesday. But now it's down from there. Maddie, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
37 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. Off to a quiet start here on a Friday. No issues yet on the Edens or Kennedy. Eisenhower looking good, too. We're starting to see some traffic build up on the Stevenson, but no accidents to report. Ryan, I-57 and the Bishop Ford are all quiet, and Lakeshore Drive is looking good in both directions. The only issue in the area is some road construction on I-88 that is only leaving the left shoulder of the exit ramp open, and that's the exit ramp onto I-355 from the Reagan I-88 on the inbound side, so keep that in mind. But everything else all quiet out there. Weather today, just an absolutely beautiful early July day. Sunshine, low humidity, a high of just 72. perfect day to play golf, so I might do that. Right now it's crystal clear and 60 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, not so much. Partly cloudy and sizzling. A high of 112 today as they continue this hot stretch all throughout June and into July of the 110s or higher. Today, no different. Right now, it's clear and 94. In sports, the Cubs, after winning their first game in their last 11 before that, they came out last night looking to make it two in a row and were slapped back down by the Phillies, losing 8-0 last night. The Phillies take 3 out of 4 from the Cubs. Cardinals come to town this afternoon, 1:21st pitch. White Sox were off. They're at Baltimore tonight to take on the Orioles. That's a 6:05 Chicago time first pitch. Diamondbacks were blown out by the Rockies 9-3. But our Phoenix listeners don't care about the Diamondbacks. They're all about the Suns these days, Chief.
Basketball town now.
That's right. The Phoenix Suns went up 2-0 last night after they took care of the Bucks in Game 2, 118-108. They're now off until Game 3 back in Milwaukee on Sunday. Chief.
I have not done the math, and it's probably beyond me for doing it in my head at this hour in the morning, but when there's 30-plus teams in every... of any of the, I'll say the four major sports, and I'll stick it in the eye of the soccer people. Four major sports. What are the chances of one city winning two of them in 1 year, like Tampa Bay?
Right, and they almost won three because the Rays last fall were in the World Series,
yeah,
and lost in the World Series. They almost had a clean sweep right
in a row. The Rays will be a contender again this year.
That's right, and the Rays will be a contender again, so they could win three in a row the other way. But yeah, talk about, it seems to go like that for some reason. I remember 10 years ago, Boston seemed to win everything. They won the Patriots, the Bruins, the Red Sox,
yeah,
and the Celtics all won kind of right in a row. And now it's Tampa Bay's turn. I'd like, we've had our runs. I mean, obviously the Bulls in the 90s, and then you had the White Sox in 05, and then, the Blackhawks had a 3-cup stretch, and they were in it every year for 6 or 7 years, and then the Cubs were in it every year for 6 years and won one. So when are the Bears going to win?
63-85. It's like 25 years apart.
Yeah, yeah. So the Bears are
The problem with the Bears now is, let's assume, and until I see it on the field, I'm not assuming anything because they've had first-round quarterbacks before, but let's assume Justin Fields is the goods and they really can put together a Super Bowl-caliber offense. The defense, which had been Super Bowl-caliber, is aging.
Oh, yeah, trying to get them both together.
Yeah. So now what?
It's a good point. Yeah, that window might be almost closed with the Khalil Mack and that group, Akeem Hicks.
Yep. And so it's the one draft pick. It's the Mitchell Trubisky draft pick that really prevented the Bears, who had a Super Bowl-caliber defense. Didn't need a great offense, but they did. And I remember texting back and forth with a friend on draft day with that, and as soon as they traded up and then took Trubisky, I said, the Bears break my heart more than any other Chicago team. Now, I didn't know if Trubisky would be terrible, good. You know, he really, for the defense that they had, he really only needed to be, you know, upper half of the league, you know, barely, you know, not much better than upper half of the league, and he wasn't. But that team with good quarterbacking would have been formidable.
And well, to your point, in 2018, I think it was, when they went 12-4 and got the first round bye, and then they should have won the game against Philadelphia, but they obviously, everyone remembers, they missed the field goal after Trubisky actually did
triple doink.
Yeah, after Trubisky actually did drive him down the field for a game-winning drive, and then the kicker blew it. He was in the upper half that one season. He took care of the ball. I think he threw like 24 touchdowns and 12 interceptions, which is certainly not great, but for a Bears quarterback standard, it's one of the best seasons ever for a Bears quarterback.
Yeah, it's not all pro, but it's good enough.
Yeah,
it was good enough when your defense is that good.
That's right, and that was the year they had the great year. Then he, for whatever reason, he regressed, and they never got back to that level.
Well, I don't want to give my spiel here, but I think the Bears issue, yes, they haven't had a quarterback, but they also, man, if you look back at the last 15 years and compare them to, say, just, you can't do all of them, but say pick five other teams that are decent. I mean, a good, you know, that have been close every year. Say the Packers. The thing that pops into your head, I mean, it absolutely, it doesn't pop into your head, it slaps you in the face, is that you look at the amount of people that the Bears have drafted. Doesn't matter what the positions are, doesn't matter who they are, It's the amount of people the Bears have drafted, just in terms of numbers, that spent over 3 or 4 years in football, regardless who it is, who they were for, or, and then if you look at how many years they played with the Bears, compared to, say, the Packers, the difference is dramatic. It's like 15 to 20 more people. And I don't see how the hell, if you had, you know, whatever, you know, Johnny Unitas is your quarterback, you can make up for that. They just don't have the depth because they don't draft it. There were years where they had, you know, 4 picks. Some other people are having 7, or being back before there were 7 when there were 10. And in 2 years, not one of those guys was even in football, let alone for somebody else, not just with the Bears. Where the Packers had, you know, they're averaging 7-8 people a year, and virtually 5 to 6 are in football somewhere, 3 to 4 still with the Packers. I don't see how you compete with that.
Yeah, if you trade your draft picks for players and leave yourself with very few, then you better draft really well, and they didn't. But the other problem with that, of course, is if you draft well and you always have a young team, you're not too expensive, and so you don't run up against cap problems. And that was always something that was a problem for the Bears. Is they just they hamstrung themselves. And,
you know who's had the I won't say the worst, but I'll say it has to be either the worst or very close. Has had the worst cap problems in the last like 15 years of any team in football. You'd never guess.
Well, and having a cap problem is not bad if you have great players, but if you if you're capped out over guys who just aren't that good, that's a little bit of a problem.
Yeah, it was Detroit, and Detroit was like the worst team in football. Well, Matt Millen paid the two ends, and was there somebody on defense? Man, he paid like 4 guys, like half the cap or something.
Yeah, and I remember
you can't do that in football.
The Lions, some crazy, like they spent 4 out of 5 first-round picks in like 5 years on wide receivers, and it's like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
I mean, talk about a position that, you know, if you get the Calvin Johnson type like they did the 1 year, then that's, I guess that's fine. You have maybe the best at his position for 10 to 12 years. I get that. But other than that, I mean, you can find receivers anywhere. You can sign them as free agents. You can find them later in the draft. Like, you got to build a foundation here. And that just really killed them and set them back. And they've almost never recovered from that.
If you can possibly do it, if you can get the, again, this is injuries play a part, but if you can get the 12-year O tackle that's either all pro or close to it, or center, now the two guys from Notre Dame have introduced the guard position to that spot because they can dominate from the middle because if you get a guard that's a once in a generation guy where he can actually hit the tackle, move him a little bit, and then head off and make a secondary block at the linebacker, you almost can pay the guy double. And there's probably, 5 guys in the league that can do that, Kevin, maybe?
Yeah, well, probably, and Quentin Nelson's one of them.
Yeah, and who's the guy? I mean, is he the Indianapolis guy or is he the Dallas guy?
He's in Indianapolis.
Well, who's the Dallas guy?
The other one was Ronnie Stanley. He got injured and missed a lot of last season, but Ronnie Stanley in Baltimore.
Well, who's the Notre Dame dude in Dallas? He could do it when he first came up.
Martin.
Yeah.
Zach Martin.
But I mean, now you're talking about people. But I'm saying, if you can get the 2 or 3 offensive linemen that are going to be there for a decade that are high level, I mean, that to me is the anchor of your team. I mean,
Bears teams in the 80s and into the 90s, we can rattle off the names of their linemen to this day because they were the same guys every year.
But now they don't even know who they are. I mean,
It's true. I mean, you really want to build from the inside out. You want to build strong offensive line and defensive line. And then by doing that, then you can really survive with a cheap running back, cheaper linebackers, you know, cheaper safeties, things like that. Now, in today's NFL, if you don't have a quarterback, you're not going to win at all, but you can still have a very good team just with good line play. I mean, we've seen it with Baltimore for a long time where they've consistently been good because they're so good up front on both sides. That even without, you know, the elite quarterback, they've still been good. And now they might have an elite quarterback, although he's a pretty unique quarterback, so I don't know how that's going to play out. But you're exactly right. The interior play, that's the foundation.
Well, and you need somebody. I mean, the name, if you see Dallas play, you'll see the Bob Lilly's number all over the place. Well, the guy was there for what? Kevin, 12 years, 13 years, the guy got double teamed every play. I mean, football is a numbers game. It's an interesting game. It's very complicated. So I'm not trying to minimize it, but it comes down to being a numbers game. If you have, there's five people on the line, and just say there's four defensive linemen, well, sometimes now there's three. We'll say it's four. Well, if you got one guy that could pretty much always handle his guy, well, now you got four on three. So if you got one guy who's a little bit weak, you can help him out. This is not that difficult. If you got a defensive guy that takes two of the other guys to block every play, now they've got a problem, right?
And
Kevin?
If you have the ability where you don't have to have your offensive or your tight end stay in and help block,
right,
and he can actually be a threat on the outside, that's a huge advantage.
Well,
too.
It's a dramatic. Gives you full.
The Bears always have to have tight ends that stay in and block, to
because they're covering for mediocre tackles.
Exactly.
Well, they call that the chip. The chip means he can't be out. I mean, that's why Olsen was useless on the Bears, and he's an All-Pro elsewhere, right?
Yeah, and I still don't think he was useless on the Bears. I just think that was one of the dumbest moves of the last 15 years.
There's some.
You literally had a Hall of Fame tight end that you drafted that could have been a legend here and played here his whole career and opened a restaurant and been a star. Guy, charitable guy, well-spoken, everything you want. And after 1 year, you trade him for a bag of balls and watch him great everywhere else. I mean, just ridiculous.
Speaking of charitable guys, and we don't kind of do enough of this because it – Have we ever had an athlete here, or even I won't just say an athlete, anybody who is a high-income person that gives to the community like this Rizzo guy?
I mean, I'm biased, but I think he's as good as it gets. As a teammate, as a leader, as a community guy, the guy physically goes to Lurie's all the time, like once a week. I mean, and speaks to the kids and signs autographs and takes a picture with these guys. Raises millions and millions of dollars. Never hear a bad thing about him off the field. Plays every day. I mean, God, I love the guy. Absolutely love him.
I was talking to one of my old consigliere.
Yeah, and he's a very good player. I don't know if I would call him great or Hall of Fame caliber or anything like that, but that's kind of the point. And we go back to our earlier conversation when I was talking about Pat Connaughton. Same thing. He's the guy you want. He's the perfect guy on the team, and he's good. He's not necessarily your best player because Jaren Grant was the best player on that team, but he's good and he's a leader. And Rizzo, to me, as I look at the Cubs and what the Cubs have to do, I don't know if Rizzo's going to be their first baseman if they can build another championship team. But I want him to be part of that rebuild.
Yeah.
You'd like him to be the
Whereas, I don't care if they sign Javier Baez or not at this point.
I don't either.
And I'm just assuming they're not going to sign Bryant, although I wish they would. I wish they would make a play for him and try and let bygones be bygones. But I am interested to see who the Cubs prioritize out of that because it's going to tell me a lot about their management. And if their priority becomes, well, let's sign Javier Baez and let the others get away, I'll be very, very disappointed.
Well, I'm going to lob this one out there. One of my guys, that I'm sure he's still around, one of the smartest men I ever met. I learned my trading from him. A guy named Marty O'Connell. He went to Notre Dame, which, I don't know if that was good or bad, but he said his world changed when Eric Parsegian got hired, because he's older than us, Kevin. Because football was so awful before Eric got there. Anyway, he all of a sudden it got a lot better. And I don't know if he was there for the 66 thing. He must have been. He was there for part of Eric's thing. Then he went to Stanford for his law degree and somewhere else for his MBA. And he was saying that the dumbest thing about the baseball owners, and it was before the football stuff was doing the same thing. He goes, they're so egotistical that it's made them so stupid, it's scary. There is nothing worse if you're an owner than to have a combination of limited free agency and then arbitration. And he goes, to this day, they're so stupid collectively, they're not stupid individually, that they don't see it. If you put, take a softball league, if everybody go play for whoever they want, there's going to be a competitive price. If every year only three guys get to move that can change the balance of power on the five or six best teams, they're going to be worth way more than they're worth because there's only three of them or four of them. And that's bad enough. But then if you give that guy four times the salary that everybody else is making, and somebody else gets to arbitrate based on what that guy just made in the free agent market when it was a limited free agent market, you've totally buried yourself. Because there can't be anything dumber. And that's what they did to themselves. Because Marvin Miller was the smartest man ever. He couldn't, it's not about free agency. It's about free agency coupled with arbitration. And you know what?
Well, it's also the fact that and part of the reason that the baseball owners lost so consistently to the players' union was they made it personal. You know, it always became about getting to Marvin Miller and subsequently to others who were leading the unions. And it was always personal, and they always lost because they did not make good business decisions, as you described.
Well, and so, I mean, the problem with the Cubs signing Bryant is I shed no tear for the Ricketts. I mean, I have no love lost for those guys. But I will say this, for them to retain Bryant and when he becomes the balance of power among five teams that think they're going to the World Series, he will sign for way more than he's, quote, worth, just like they all have. I mean, the difference between him being a free agent, what he's making now, is all about him being only one of a few people that are available. If everybody was available, the prices would actually probably go down from what they are now. So the owners think if everybody's a free agent, the price would go up for everybody. I'm going to say economically, they're absolutely wrong. That's an F paper. They would go down, Kevin and Manny, if everybody was available. Because otherwise, now all of a sudden you're going to pay him $10 million a year. And he hits 280. And he's like never won a gold glove. He's a good ball player. I mean, he's very versatile. And all of a sudden you get a guy like Wisdom 3 years from now sitting, hey, this guy's making $10 million. I just hit 285. And by the way, I'm as good or better on defense as he is. Where's my $8 million? And he's going to win an arbitration when in fact they're probably all worth four. You know, is what I'm saying. Right.
Yep. So speaking of everybody's available, who do you think's available on the Cubs that can get him anything?
Probably one guy, the reliever.
Well, I think Kimbrel is maybe the most valuable guy in the trade market right now. He's been the best closer in all of baseball this year. But he has like a 0.5 ERA. I think he's only blown one save, or maybe he hasn't even blown a single save all year. He could get you a lot, and I think the Cubs will definitely move him, assuming they don't, you know, rattle off seven of the next eight games or something like that. Other than that, yeah, you're looking at Chafin, the setup guy, has a lot of value because he's been really, really good, and everyone is always looking for an eighth-inning guy. Those two are the first two to come to mind. But other than that, I mean, are you going to trade Bryant because you're not going to resign him? Are you going to trade Baez or Rizzo because you're not going to resign them? Are you going to trade Hendricks because you're not going to resign him? I mean, I'm interested to find out. Contreras?
Hey, Kimbrel, if he...
I wouldn't be surprised to see Hendricks go. I wouldn't be surprised to see Bryant go. There's not a lot of contending teams that need a third baseman badly. And because he's a rental player for a few months, he's not going to draw you tons of prospects, but he might get you something. You know, he might get you something that's better than nothing if you don't think you're going to sign him.
Well, Kendrick, the reliever, you know, he could be a guy that if he really wants to be a Cub, he could go somewhere else for 4 months and then re-sign with the Cubs.
He could do the Aroldis Chapman deal. Yeah.
But I think when somebody dumps you, unless they talk to you first, I think it's, I don't know if I want to go back there type of thing. But anyway, the thing that they were listening to and everybody last night was talking about press conference. Oh, man, you know. And then even what's his name? Your staff... Your stat buddy, is it Boog or Boop? Or what the hell's the guy's name? Was a
Boog Shiambi.
Boog Shiambi?
You know, well, it's certainly clear that when your percentage chances of becoming in the playoffs is less than, is in the single digits, you gotta like start moving people. And I'm like, wait a minute. I mean, statistics aren't just that. What are the statistics of some team having an 11-game losing streak? It's pretty low. But they had a lot of injuries, a lot of stuff, and they played all the good teams. Well, okay. I mean, the same statistics are that the same thing could happen to Milwaukee. The division's not that strong. And, oh, by the way, the Cubs could win 5 or 6 in a row and they get people back. I'm not saying they will. But it's real early to bail on an 8-game, being 8 games out when the team in front of you is not that good. So I mean, it's...
Well, let me put it this way. I'll resurrect this weekend. I'll resurrect a spreadsheet that I make every year, and I'll send it to you guys. It's the trade deadline spreadsheet. And what it does is it takes everybody's current record. I don't use everybody. The teams that are clearly out of it, I just don't bother with. But you plug in the top 2 or 3 teams in each division and what their records are, and then you say, what do they have to, how good a ball do they have to play to win 90 games this year? Because that'll probably get you in the playoffs. How good a ball do they have to play to win 95 games this year? Because that'll definitely get you in the playoffs. And when you look at a team and say, whatever its record is now, it has to play 650 ball to win 90 games. You're going to play, and you look and you ask that question. Are you kidding yourself? Or do you really think that the Cubs can suddenly play 650 baseball for the next 3 months and win if you just get them one more player? Then that sort of tells you what you should be doing.
I think
it's always interesting, but I do have a tab in there for some of the greatest comebacks. Like when the Rockies had 20 out of 22 games or something to kick it in at the end of the year and make the playoffs. It does happen, and that's what you're saying, Tom, is happen once in a while that someone just gets hot and makes a run.
I would take your spreadsheet absolutely to heart if I was in the American League East. But being Cincinnati and St. Louis, not so good. Pittsburgh, horrible. So could there be a combination of Milwaukee injuries and screw-ups, since now they're playing the good teams, and the Cubs somehow getting people back? Could they gain 8 games on Milwaukee? The answer is yes in this many period. You're right, but in this particular situation, I don't think 8 games against Milwaukee is insurmountable because they were 4 games ahead of Milwaukee 3 weeks ago, right? Just saying. I mean,
you're right. It's not insurmountable, but you have to start asking your question is, can you play sustained really good baseball like that for the rest of the
season? Well, I guess what I'm really saying.
Not just catching them, it's staying ahead of them.
What I'm really saying is there's a chance in that division you could win with 85 wins.
Well, and if you think you can win with 85, go for it. But, you can start playing with those numbers as well.
Yeah, well
you're right, Milwaukee. Well, Milwaukee is 53-36 right now, so they're playing almost .600 baseball right now. Could they falter and wind up being a little better than a .500 team? Yeah, but we could, we can project out that number too and say, what's it going to take them to win 85 games? Because the Cubs are 43-45. What's it going to take them to win 85 games? And you just start looking at it in terms of likelihood. There's nothing absolute because there's injuries are a factor, that there's so much that factors into it. But when you just start looking at it and say, what are the numbers really telling me? What what's really the projection? Is it realistic? And sometimes you have to say no. It just isn't realistic that anything good's going to come.
I'm going to put words in Matty Weber's mouth here because Matty's smarter than either one of us in the sense that he looks at the schedule. I'm not so sure I've ever seen baseball right now where the difference between playing Baltimore and Pittsburgh versus San Diego and L.A. has ever been higher. I mean, I think the huge run-up in the Brewers' record has been where they played Pittsburgh for the last month.
Well, it's no coincidence that the last 20-some-odd games, the Brewers, played like 900 ball, and then the Cubs obviously were horrible. The Cubs played teams that were above 500 for a month straight, and the Brewers feasted off the Diamondbacks and the Pirates and everything like that. So that should even out after 162 games. Now, that said, I'm not saying the Cubs are going to catch them or any better. But what bothers me is I think Hoyer, who you're talking about, has to look at the big picture, and he certainly knows what he's doing. I mean, we just finished the best 7-year stretch in the history of a 150-year-old organization. The guy's good. But I hate this idea that we have to operate like a small market team where we can't rebuild, quote unquote, but also still be competitive. Like, I don't want them to completely empty the drawer and not re-sign anyone, and then now we have to wait 4 years again for prospects to come up, and then we're competitive again in 2027 or something. Like, can't we,
yeah.
We should be, we make enough money here, and I say we, the team makes enough money here, you would think that they could do sort of a, you know, rebuild on the fly, but still be competitive. I mean, for God's sake.
Well, Manny, what was the year that
I agree with you, Matt, and I would go as far as to say it's not just the team, because they're well attended and their ticket prices, you know, their gate is healthy and all of that. And it's not just last year. The budget before that has been, the budget for several years now has been a constraint for a team that not only makes money operating as a baseball team, but how much of that redevelopment around the park is tied into the Ricketts family investments?
Well, a lot. Right. Well, just from a we're going to head here, but we got Carl coming in. Just as somebody on the other side, and I know everybody, you know, there's that chief, that old curmudgeon guy. I had season tickets, well, I split season tickets when they did this before, and I'm going to say that I was paying. By the end of the time, I was paying pretty damn top dollar for upper deck seats. I don't know if anybody else in the league were that high. And when they got rid of everybody that year, I don't know what year it was, man. You probably know.
It was like 2012, 2013. Yeah, and when you say everybody, they didn't have anybody. They were terrible.
Well, they got rid of some people.
They got rid of some people on a horrible team.
No, I'm talking about the year that they all of a sudden they had a couple injuries. They got everybody back. They had a real hot 2 weeks. And the few people that had season tickets, like, well, they had a lot of people with season tickets, all of a sudden you actually got a heartbeat again, and then they got rid of all those guys that played good for 2 weeks. Remember that year?
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to say that payroll from July 10th on, or whatever the hell the date was, to the end of the year was roughly $25 million. I didn't pay for that. I mean, they cut their payroll by probably two-thirds. They should have sent me half my money back from the season tickets, and they didn't, and they're not going to ever. But I mean, that's like paying to see Pavarotti or someplace at an opera, and he's not there, and Thomas walks out, and they want the same dough. I mean, right? I mean, no other entertainment.
I actually might be willing to pay the same dough to see Thomas out singing opera.
But you know what I'm saying? I mean, no other entertainment venue in the world can bait and switch like that. You know,
I agree with you. That's a good point.
We got Al Kaline and Rocky Colavito on the team in January. You have your money in next week. Oh, by the way, we just traded Al Kaline and Rocky Colavito. Gee, that's cool, right? Duh. I mean, how many people?
It was worth it. The last 6 years were amazing. Making the playoffs every year, winning a World Series, making three straight NLCS.
But my
whole life, I never thought I would.
I know,
see
but
it.
You just said
it was totally worth it.
But you just said it. Did they really have to go down that low that year in this market to do it?
I don't think they do, but this ownership has proven that they either don't have enough money or they're just not willing to spend it.
Well, that's probably SP Futures up 20 now, NASDAQ Futures up 16. We're coming back everything from yesterday at this point. We'll be right back, Mr. Carl Denninger.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, jocks,
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now.
There's something happening here.
Hello, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Alley, Mr. Matt Weber on the board. SP Futures up 21, NASDAQ Futures up 19. And we have with us Mr. Carl Denninger that bought 50 Spoo down 79 yesterday, and we came back 40, and now we're up 20 today. He's up 69 on his Spoos. How you doing, Carl? Laughing your way to the bank?
Well, you know, that was a real interesting day yesterday, frankly.
Yeah.
And I think one of the other interesting aspects of it, probably the most interesting aspect, is that the 10-year Treasury is calling BS on this inflation call that everybody has been making, and what the data's been showing us, which is interesting.
I heard that ad nauseum all day yesterday, and somebody came out and actually said that the Treasuries are telling you that there's a deflation coming our way. And then when I look at the Fed balance sheet dropped a little last week, so I'm perfect. But basically, they've averaged $10 billion a day that they've bought in that market. How does anybody even have a clue as to what the real Treasury price is, except that some gorilla keeps buying them every day?
Well, they don't. That's the problem. But see, here's the thing that goes along with that. Okay, yeah, okay, there's a gorilla in there that's buying them every day. That's true. But there's a lot of other people that also own them. And those people who do own them and are buying them are still getting the same coupon that everybody else is getting, right? So the problem with that is nobody intentionally loses money in the market. People do it because they're stupid all the time.
Except the Fed.
Okay.
Except the Fed.
Well, yeah. But the thing is I mean, the rest of humanity does not intentionally light $100 bills on fire. I mean, we do it, when we do it, it's because we make a mistake. All right, but we don't do it on purpose. And so the challenge here is that somebody is very, very wrong about the intermediate term direction. And the person who's very wrong is really going to regret being wrong, because the leverage in the bond market is very substantial, and when you're wrong, it hurts.
Well, you wandered right into probably the I'm going to say it's the single biggest question that I have about the markets today, Carl. And I mean, your opinion I will love to hear, because it's what you just said is a little to me. It's a bigger issue than the way you described it. When I first started in the business, I just mentioned his name before, a guy named Marty O'Connell, very bright, and they had these old timers, you know, that, and this is in 1980, 81, somewhere in there. And you had a lot of stuff going on. You had, you know, inflation was here. We had, you know, people had just gone off the gold standard, where I say just within the last decade, and all the currencies are fluctuating all over the damn place. And there was a lot of opportunity for trading. I mean, there was no S&P futures. They had just gotten bond futures, so there was no trade like today. There was no E-minis. There wasn't an OEX, even before an OEX. But there was stuff going down. I mean, the bonds were super hot. I don't think the euro dollar was anything, but it was bonds and it was currencies that were flying all over the place. And you had the Bank of Japan not liking that the yen was going down versus the dollar, so they would come out and they'd buy dollars, all right, and then they their fingers stayed in the dike from noon to 1 o'clock, and then it went the other way, and it all that happened at the end of the day is the Bank of Japan basically pissed away $1 billion, right? I mean, they were just a trader like him, and the joke was that all these people, they think they're bigger than the market, even the governments, and nobody's bigger than the markets, even the governments. In truth, that was true. If you saw a central bank who was trying to protect the pound, protect the Swiss franc, protect the franc, even protect the dollar, they were like pissing in the ocean, trying even with several $1 billion would try and, you know, the U.S. would go buy pounds to save the dollar versus the pounds. Well, at the end of the day, guess what? The dollar was still down. So it was pretty obvious that no one on any given day was bigger than the market. Now, I don't know about that, Carl, because we're talking about over a period of many, many months, $5, $10, $15 billion a day. If you ask these guys at the Fed, I don't think they care if there's $30 trillion on that balance sheet. They're going to win. And I don't. I think they've become. You can't tell me that. You can try, and then you may win the argument. You can't tell me that the European Central Bank, with negative interest rates, is not become bigger than the market. I've read stories where they own, you know, 80 to 90% of some CRD numbers of the bonds that have come out. They buy everything.
And I believe that. Okay, but here's the challenge with doing that. The anchor, if you will, of the equity market and of virtually everything that people do that requires the use of some kind of leverage. I don't care if it's corporate, I don't care if it's personal, all right? Because most people finance their homes, right?
Yep.
So, and those who don't finance their homes because they're renting, the person who owns the building financed it. Right?
Yeah.
I mean, there aren't that many people out there. I mean, sure, there's people like me that, you know, I bought my house and I paid cash for it, and when I sold my previous one and bought this one, it was a cash swap, right? So, I mean, once I did it the first time, then it's not so hard to do it the next time, right? Because you've got the equity there. But most people don't get to that point. And when you look at it in percentage terms, that's just the way it is. That most, I mean, commercial real estate's the same way. So when you get there and you say, all right, we're going to unanchor this from reality and from the market. We're going to just own the predicate and the basis of all of it. All right, fine. You go ahead and do that. But now, what makes you think that this is not going to have a dislocating style effect?
Well, it is. That's,
you know,
my
the
point.
Places.
I think the only thing, if I could interject here, the only thing I think we're discussing, I won't say arguing about, is that if you and I, if it was 10 years ago and somebody dropped us off the moon of Venus and we looked at this European market, we'd say, wait a minute, nobody's dumb enough to have minus 0.4 rates on the 10-year. Nobody would ever make that trade. You and I are going to go in there and we're going to short those bonds, okay? Because we're going to say, even if it's the central bank, I mean, in our day, I'll say, not that we're, you know, washed up at all. I mean, in our day, even a central bank, after they got their butt kicked 2 weeks in a row losing other people's money, they would say, are we sure we're doing this right, and back off. And so you and I could short those bonds, and even if we might take some pain for a week or two, but if it's such a horrible trade being long them at negative interest rates like it is, we would be reasonably assured that in a relatively short period of time, we would be winners. But now we're sitting there going, wait a minute, this is pushing 2, 3, 4, 5 years. There's no discipline whatsoever on the other side of what they're doing. And there's no discipline on Powell's part, just reaching back, give me another troll. I don't see how you and I, or any investors, they have become, in my opinion, bigger than the market. Finally, which they never were before. And once I sort of realized that, I stopped fighting them. Actually,
well, yeah, you can't, I mean, you know, that's the thing about somebody who can always go back and play games and, you know, to blankety blank with the, you know, with even the law.
Yeah.
I mean, when 2008 came around and the Fed bought Fannie and Freddie paper, which was illegal, like flat out black letter illegal, and absolutely nothing was done about it. And then Congress turned around and retroactively put a federal support, a federal guarantee under that paper, which didn't exist at the time the Fed bought it. That's why it was against the law. All right. I that bias, I mean, I reported on it at the time. That was flabbergasting to me. But at that point, you basically had the Congress and the Federal Reserve, a supposedly independent central bank, that between the two of them decided, we don't care what the law says, we'll do whatever the HE double match sticks we want.
Yeah.
And you can all go twist in the wind. All right. Well, the problem with doing that is, yeah, you can do that and you can distort the market in that kind of way, but have you actually tried to buy the wood to frame a house lately? Look at the things that are going on around you with supply dislocations right now. Look at all the Ford trucks that are sitting in the as-built lots that can't be started and can't be sold because there's no chips in their engine control computer.
Right.
I mean, it looks like a perfectly good truck. Unfortunately, if you turn the key, nothing happens.
maybe we should go back to carburetors and points. But you know, here's how it's changed my. About 2-3 weeks ago, when I started to see all this. I mean, you and I have been talking about the inflation forever, right? So finally, we started to hear it every other place. Even some of the, you know, the representatives are basically bitching at Powell, saying, what are you talking about? So I thought there's probably a really good chance that these guys, you know, finally were going to let up a little bit. Not turn the policy around, but at least stop piling money in every day of, you know, which they are doing. And so I put position out for my people to essentially go short bonds. But now I've realized that I'm not the gorilla in this room like 40 years ago traders could be. So I think for some of my guys that have, you know, million-dollar accounts, Carl, I put a position out with options that the worst that could happen is I lost $1,000. I mean, that's how small of a position. Now, if it went my way and I really caught it right, I was going to make a lot more than that. But the fact that the bonds have actually gone up since that day and down, I mean, let's put it this way. I'm appalled, but I'm not surprised that my $1,000 is in the wind. Because, I mean, the thought of after this is finally catching fire worldwide that people are saying, yeah, this is happening, for these guys to essentially double up and start buying twice as many bonds per day over the next three-week period, like I said, Carl, I'm appalled by it. The leadership, I don't know where it's coming from, but I'm not surprised. And then when they came out with the minutes of the meeting, and they basically said, we have to keep doing it because we said we were going to do it, I'm like, who are these people? Where did we get them? I mean, who are they? I mean, nobody could say, we said we're going to throw gas on the fire, and even though it looks like the gas isn't working so hot to put the fire out, we're going to keep doing it because we said that was our policy. You wouldn't get a third grader to do that. Yet these guys are doing it. But I'm appalled, but I'm not surprised.
That's the thing is that now, given that reality, okay, and we've seen that, you know, since 2008, right? The question to ask and the way to get through this as an individual or as a, you know, as someone who's running money for other people, whether you're doing it for yourself or somebody else, the way you survive this from a societal and from a monetary and from a economic perspective personally is what's going to break, try to anticipate what's going to break and be in a place where you don't care that it does at worst and you can profit from it at best. I mean, you know, let me just give you a tiny little example. Right? I got a self-propelled lawnmower, right? A basic Husqvarna, which is essentially a Craftsman, right? With a different label on it. So the front wheel bearings on it, front drive, front wheel bearings on it, have this habit of every 3 or 4 years, they're cheap bearings and the seals break and then they need to be replaced. Okay, fine. So it's a little assembly. These assemblies are about $20. And you pull them off, it takes about 20 minutes. All right, so every 3-4 years, I replace these things because I'm not buying a $500 lawnmower when there's $40 worth of parts that are wrong with it, right?
Yeah,
it's just dumb. You can't get them.
Oh, no, they'll pull those out.
I just had them shred this last week while I was doing the front grass, and I went online to the places that I've always looked to get them. There's a half dozen places around the United States that normally stock these things because it's a very common part. It's on 20 different lawnmowers, 20 different models. And guess what? Every single one of them is backordered, and nobody knows when they'll have them.
I have a somewhat similar story in Maddie Weber's old apartment. There's a KitchenAid gas cooktop. Now, if anybody knows anything about gas stoves or cooktops, there's what, like three parts in them? there's not very many. Well, when you have the electronic ignition, there's a central igniter unit, which costs, you know, $150. But there's also a little part that goes on every one of the burners. It's like $8.
Yeah.
Well, KitchenAid decided to stop making that part, which basically means everybody on a piece of, you know, as long as it still matches your kitchen, should basically last a century. It's not going to last a century because that part wears out. So instead of
when it does, you're now buying a new one, whether you like it or not.
Right, you're buying a new one whether you like it or not. And this has happened, you know, at one point, didn't the government mandate that General Motors and Ford and Chrysler had to make replacement parts for at least 10 years or something? But fortunately, so many Chevy and Ford and Chrysler trucks get sold that there's 15 other people making them, and you don't have to worry about it. You can buy your steering parts from Moog or somebody else. But if you don't catch fire like that, basically these guys, now the danger you run is you get pissed off at KitchenAid and you will buy any new cooktop except a KitchenAid. You know, that,
right.
Which could happen. I mean, if you say, wait a minute, you guys, but if you go on the internet, I don't go on the internet very much, but I go on the internet and I was looking for this part, Carl, you wouldn't believe the pissed off people out there saying, wait a minute, I gotta buy a new cooktop because these idiots stopped making this $6 part on purpose. You know, it's not, but I get the thing that kind of bothers me, but we'll get back to our other subject, Carl, is that I know at some point, and we're getting closer, that Powell's going to walk into the representatives and they're going to see inflation 10%, or we're going to get an over 1% number in 1 month, which I think is pretty close, even with the way they count it. And the guy's just going to be vilified. I'm tired of listening to your crap. And somebody's going to say, all of a sudden you're going to see a headline that says, really? $10 trillion, you know, balance sheet? I mean, the rate they went the last couple of weeks was, I mean, he admitted to only to doing $130 billion in a month. They did 150 or 145 in 2 weeks. Well, at that rate, I mean, you're talking $10 billion a day. You're going to get another trillion in 100 days. I mean, he's not telling anybody. That's a number that I don't even know that our Congress and President are so dumb that they don't look at that saying, what are you guys doing? I mean, we're reaching kind of the incredible stage here. You know, how much gas?
Well, but that's the problem with exponents. Okay, I mean, you understand this. I understand this. The general public does not understand this. Compounding is a wonderful thing when it's on your side. All right, we all think it's the best thing since sliced bread. When it's on the other side, when it gets away from you, it is the mother and father of all bad. And that's the box that these guys back themselves into. And you know, everybody looks at like all the things that have gone on over the last 18 months and just kind of scratch their head. You know, all the stuff with COVID and the government's response to it and everything else. All I've been watching when it comes to the federal budget and the federal government and this sort of thing for the last 10 plus years is the CMS lines in the Treasury statement. That's it. For Medicare and Medicaid Services. Those are the only lines that matter. That's the entire, that whole section. That's it. You take that out of the monthly Treasury statements and you watch the trend lines in there and it will tell you exactly what has happened since 2000 and where it was going to go and what was going to be done. And if you want to know why the government went bananas when COVID started, all you have to do is look at the fact that prescription drug spend under CMS in 2019 for the first time in 20 years was down.
Wow.
And guess what happened the next year? CMS spending on an annualized basis in that drug area was up 30%.
Well, last year they essentially doubled over the amount of tax. I mean, don't take this wrong, Carl, but the guys who have money, the rich people, I was listening to two knuckleheads arguing at the other night, and it was about the corporate tax rate and how if they raise the corporate tax rate to something reasonable, I mean, you know, to maybe a little more than half to what regular people pay, which I guess it is a little bit more than half, you know, that somehow it's gonna cause everybody this huge, you know, problem that would go from 21 to 28 is a big problem, right? I almost was going to break into the conversation and said, do you, either one of you two idiots realize you're not talking about 21 to 28. You're talking about a government that's paying, that is taking in exactly half of what they're putting out.
Right.
We're not talking about tax rates going up 10%. We're talking about, and the Republicans, yesterday they were declaring victory. Basically, they beat down Biden's attempt to raise taxes at all. I mean, don't those guys look at the numbers? I mean, what they took in $3 trillion last year and they spent $6 trillion. We're not even on the planet. It's not like we're 10% away or 15% away because of COVID. We're double. And then they helped out the states. They sent enough money to the states to where maybe the states, you know, are a little less in trouble. But I mean, do we really think that these guys are going to be in a double stage now for a long time?
But here's the problem with that. All right, what do we got now? A $20 trillion economy, roughly, right?
Roughly, and we're more than that in debt.
Right. So here's the thing: you have a $20 trillion economy, and three of it, okay, is essentially, you know, emitted out of the middle of the federal government. Out of, you know, everyone says the Fed prints money. The Fed doesn't print money. Congress prints money. And so you take that and do the division on it. What's that in the inflation rate again?
About
12%, right? I mean, is that about right?
Yeah, but you say that a lot, but and I know that you're not wrong in the way you're saying it. But if the Fed didn't inject money into the system, the Congress would have to borrow that money.
Yeah, but if Congress didn't, spend money they didn't have, the Fed wouldn't have anything to buy.
Well, that's right. But I mean,
you have to look at causality here. I can only if I'm a heroin addict, I can only buy a fix heroin. But
what you just said though is that in your mind the Fed is not independent.
Of course.
Okay. Well then, all right. But same. But for the listeners, the government, I'll use the term Treasury, decides to spend more than they take in. Okay, this is in a normal world, which I don't know what the world we're in now. They have to go out and essentially borrow that money from somebody. Correct? That's how they're going to get more. Otherwise, they can't write a check that they don't have the money for. Right? But what ends up happening?
But here's the problem with that. Okay, if the premise of an independent Federal Reserve is that the Federal Reserve says nuts to doing that.
Right. Well, that's my point. But just in terms of education for people listening, if in a normal world, if the government wants to spend more money than they take in, they have to borrow that money. Years ago from themselves, or I said from the American citizenry, and after a while, you know, countries overseas started buying some. They either have to do that or they have to raise taxes. Neither one of them are all that palatable to most people, and that is essentially the discipline on the system. Okay, but the Fed, they may say, well, the Fed can actually create money out of thin air. They're going to say, don't worry, lob those bonds out there, borrow the money in the market, and we'll go in and buy them at the end of the day. So the same amount of money is still in the system. So the money that you just borrowed, the $100 from Carl, I mean, if you borrowed $100 from Carl, all the change would be is the Fed would have $100 and you have $100 less. So you didn't add anything to consumption. Because now the $100 Carl can't spend, the government spent. All you did was say they're spending it instead of you, correct? But now if the Fed comes in, makes the $100 up, and then borrows and buys that bond from Carl, now Carl's still got the $100 and the federal government's got the $100, right? And the Fed has $100 on their balance sheet. Carl, I'm going to say that other than maybe our listeners, nobody understands that. When I get on other radio shows, the minute I say something like that, the phone lights up. What did that guy just say again? What's he talking about? Nobody knows.
But this is the sleight of hand. And then there's this premise that you have out there that, of course, all the Congress people, including the supposedly, hard money folks, like when Ron Paul was around and now Rand, right? Is, oh no, it's an independent agency. They're completely independent, like the blankety blank they are.
Yeah.
Who wrote the charter?
Well, there have been Federal Reserve guys that said I'm giving you this much and not much more. They might say,
but you know what? There have also been presidents that put Fed presidents up against the wall, literally, and assaulted them. Hello, Burns.
Well, what did Trump do to this guy? What do you think he did?
What was he threatened with? We don't know, but you could bet that there was, Mr. Debt, Mr. I Love Debt, and nearly blew my own head off in the 1980s with it. Certainly wasn't about to back off on that now, was he?
Well, I'm going to say that it was a combination of being waterboarded and saying that none of his rich friends and nobody in the financial community was going to give him $7 million in the year he left office like they did Janet Yellen. It was a combination of those two things. would be my guess. How funny is that? SBG's up 20, NASDAQ's up 5. Be right back. Stocks with Jocks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to factor in the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other life decision. Your brain is smarter than your gut, and that's why you owe it to yourself to read Luckbox. We've made it easy because Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with timely, actionable trading ideas, and equips you with savvy investing tactics you don't already know, all while exploring how to live your best life through music, spirits, food, sports, travel, fitness, and a whole lot more. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on controlling their financial futures. It's for overachievers and alpha types who don't buy into Wall Street's investment gurus. It's for mavericks who believe in life, luxury, and the pursuit of happiness. It's for you. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you are aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. PTI, we have always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and try to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, owner of HomeSource Realty and frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks Radio Show. If you're thinking about purchasing real estate, this summer could be a good time to shop around. Whether you're a novice or seasoned investor, low interest rates and good inventory make adding bricks and mortar investment to your portfolio an interesting possibility. Many a great fortune has begun with the purchase of property. Call me today for your personal investment consultation, and I would be happy to get you started on your path to prosperity. You can reach me at AudreyJohnson@Realtor.com or call me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Holley, Mr. Matt Weber. S&P futures up $20.50. NASDAQ futures only up a buck. Make that $2. It's flipping around here pretty good. Dow's up 266. Over in Europe, we've got DAX up 141. It's 0.9%. They were down well into the ones yesterday. FTSE up 1.something%. FTSE up 51.7%. CAC around up 107. It's 1.7%. They were down about 2.5% yesterday. Asia, Nikkei down 177.6%. Shanghai down 1%. Call that flat. Hang Seng up 191.7%. They were down like 2.5% yesterday. Hang Seng's been really pretty more volatile just about anywhere. As a way of review, yesterday, Dow ended up down 259. Was down 500 at one point. S&P down 37. NASDAQ up down 105. So we're up 20. So that's almost a Fibonacci return. Two-thirds. Almost, not quite. Matter of fact, it's probably not even close to that. No, two-thirds would be more like, 24 or something. So, close enough. Bonds up four basis points, 1.33. Bund up one basis point, minus 0.30. Japan unchanged at 0.03 positive. Oil up 64 cents, 73.58. Brent up 48, 74.60. If you'd have... So that spreads back to a buck. It got lower than a buck, which, you know, I don't know if I've ever seen too often. Natural gas up a penny, 370. RBOB up a penny, 227. We've got gold up 240 at 1802, hanging on to that 1800-hour number. Silver up 11 cents, 2610. Copper up 6 cents, 432. Platinum up 14 bucks at 1088. And we've got our Bitcoin down 154, 32,769. Maddie, what do you got for us? Trevi Weather Sports.
38 minutes past the hour, right on the dot. Good morning once again to everyone out there. Still off to a good start here on a Friday morning as far as accidents and delays are concerned. No issues on the Edens. Kennedy, it looks like some traffic building around O'Hare, but if you're heading into downtown, it's not too bad, which is a good sign. Traffic building on the Eisenhower, but no significant delays. Same for the Stevenson. Dan Ryan, I-57, and the Bishop Ford are all quiet, as is Lakeshore Drive. Off the expressways, Northwest Burbs, Dempster at South Bussey Road, there is a crash. But that appears to be the only crash in the area, so enjoy a nice quiet ride if you're heading into downtown this morning. Weather today, absolutely picture perfect for this time of year. Partly cloudy skies, low humidity, a high of just 72. Right now it is mostly clear and 61 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, they're almost going to double us, Chief. Partly cloudy with a high of 112. Right now it's clear and 94. In sports, Cubs lost 3 out of 4 to the Phillies, getting shut out last night, 8-0. They welcomed the Cardinals into town this afternoon at Wrigley. White Sox were off. They're at Baltimore tonight to take on the Orioles. That's a 6:05 Central Time first pitch. Diamondbacks lost big to the Rockies, 9-3. And in the NBA Finals, the Phoenix Suns are now just 2 games away from winning their first ever NBA championship. They beat the Bucks last night, 118-108, to go up 2-0 in that best of 7. Chief.
Is this 2-3-2 or 2-2-1-1-1?
Good question. The finals are usually 2-3-2, but I can't remember if they changed that or not. So I'll have to, with the bubble last year,
kind of went back and forth.
I'm kind of thrown off here, so I'll get that for you.
You think the Bucks are capable of winning 2 in Milwaukee?
I am, but the idea of them winning 4 of the next 5, which is what they have to do, seems pretty daunting. But I do think they can absolutely win the next 2.
Well, if you can win the next 2, then you're starting over.
Yeah, that's true. Then you just got to win 2 out of 3.
Well, and if everybody wins their home games, that's why you want the home spot.
Yeah, so it says series, it's back to the 2-2-1-1-1 format, which is the best format.
I would agree.
I think.
It's a long flight, but still.
Yeah, but they give them an extra day now between the travel, so it really doesn't come into play. But forever, the finals, it was 2-3-2. Which, you know, if you were able to steal one of the first 2 games on the road and then you got 3 straight home games, I mean, that's a pretty big advantage.
I think, Carl, I believe that way back in the day in baseball for the World Series, it depended on how far the teams were apart. And I think when New York Yankees played, whatever the National League team was in Philly or whatever it was, when they played the Giants, it was alternated games.
Oh, right, yeah, because it wasn't that far.
Yeah, they took the subway. I mean,
I know the NBA, because it was always Lakers versus Celtics. Talk about a cross-country flight.
Yeah,
and that was the big reason they went with the 2-3-2, because it was just, you know, they didn't want to be flying back and forth between Boston and Los Angeles, because it seemed like those two teams played every year.
Plus, they flew commercial in those days.
Right, so they made it 2-3-2, so that way you could kind of stay in that area. Well, obviously now with the private planes and everything, they don't care about that anymore.
Carl, just to... show what how you're up on top of this stuff. I kicked up the stats here. The stats: national debt $28.5 trillion, gross domestic product is now $22.2. So we're kind of a couple years ago that we just one got bigger than the other, and now it's one's left the other in the dust. But if you
that's what exponential series do, right? I mean,
yeah.
Hello,
Carl. How many people? I'm going to ask this question for a reason. When you look at when the median salary in this country is, I'm going to say 37, 38, and these guys got it at 36. I think they're a little low. What percentage of the population do you think is considered in the workforce?
Oh, well, we've got that.
Is it half? I mean, would half be around
now? No, it's not anymore. But again, we are including children in this, right? Because kids do exist. They're people,
right?
Well, the reason, right? I mean, if you look at the employment population ratio, that's the granddaddy number, Right, but that works off of the non-institutional population, which is, you know, which leaves a huge percentage of the total count of individuals out of the paper.
Okay, so where I'm going, I'm trying to be somewhat simple here, so we don't have to be all that accurate, but if we say the median salary or income of a worker is, let's say, 40.
Right.
And 50% of the people are working, then the average per citizen is 20. I mean, am I that far off? I use 20 as the number.
Yeah. I mean, see, here's the problem: the civilian non-institutional population, as of this, you know, last labor report, is about 261 million. The real population of the nation, according to the census, is about 330. All right, so the employed number, though, is 152, so it's about half, a little less than half, actually. It's about, you know, 48-47%.
All right, so I'm on board here. The stretch I'm trying to do here is where we're headed here. If the
divide median salary in half, and you're about on a per capita basis.
Okay, so we're talking 19,000 median.
Yeah.
Other people make a hell of a lot more. Okay, the current debt per citizen. And the I assume kids are citizens. Debt per citizen,
right.
National debt's $85,000. State debt is $3,700, and local debt is $63,000. So we're talking roughly $100,000.
About $100,000, yeah. So about 5 years worth of per capita
income.
Production.
That is a startling number when you look at it that way. The federal debt to GDP ratio in 1960, where I gotta believe we were still working off some World War II debt, was 52%. Got down to, I don't know if this is the lowest year, but the lowest on this thing here. 1980, we got down to 34%. 2000, we were up to 57. Now we're 128. That's when do we get to the point where we collapse?
It's an exponential series, which means that, and this is one of the things I pointed out in a book I wrote back, you know, 10 now years ago, Leverage. You take Excel, you take two exponential series, one grows at 2%, one grows at 5. The one grows at 5 starts out as a very small piece of the two. Okay, so you start out with, say, $100,000 or $10,000. Graph those two things out on a time series. And what you will see is that the 2% one gets swamped by the 5, and what happens is when it occurs, the 5% growth one goes vertical.
Right.
Alright, and that is what happens every single time. And it doesn't matter how far apart they start, it doesn't matter how small the original percentage is, it makes no difference. All that changes is how long it takes before you get screwed.
Well, and I think this time, because I want to get to this Wells Fargo thing that you sent me, this time, I think the blowback, my feeling is that when you get the inflation where it is, which again is going to cause the rates to go up when the Fed loses control, in my opinion, I think if you get Jerome Powell in a room with three or four of the people from the Senate and if he ever lets his hair down, which I don't know if he ever does, if I was him, my response would be, look, you idiots, if you don't figure out a way to rein in this spending. If I don't do what I'm doing, which I don't like to do, and oh, by the way, there's an end to it pretty soon, a bad end. If I don't do what I'm doing and these rates go to 5%, you guys are going to be so... I mean, if the average... I think the Fed probably pays 1% now on average on their debt. If they paid 5, that's going to be $150 billion a year versus 28. I don't see where... That's another... How do we pay another $130 billion in interest as part of the...
Well, this is what, you know, what I pointed out back when I started doing my column was that if we had resolved this situation when the 2000 tech crash blew up, because all of these crashes and all these bubbles come from essentially the same place when you get down to it, and that is the federal government writes checks that they do not have the money to cash, and they're unwilling to tax. And so you end up with these speculative excesses that get somewhere, and then somebody tries to cover it, and this goes on, and it works for a while, It feels good for a while. It's the old Friedman thing. A little inflation always feels good when you start, right?
Yep.
And, you know, it goes on for a while. People get crazy with it. You get people like Pelosi and Trump, for that matter, and McConnell. Okay, I mean, you know, both sides of the aisle are equally complicit here. And then ultimately, you end up in a situation where the level of fraud gets to the point that it can't sustain itself anymore. You can't refinance it anymore, and it blows up in your face. And the problem is, if we'd fixed it back then, it would have been a 12 or 15% contraction in GDP. If we fixed it in 2008 when it blew up, it would have been about a 20% contraction, which, by the way, would have been very close to the worst, which was 1920-21, okay, in history. If we tried to fix it now, it would be close to half of the federal spending would have to be whacked.
Yep.
And when you look at that and you say, they can't do that. Well, excuse me, that what you must do at some point because you can't continue what you're doing will happen.
What do you think, Carl, that if they're still alive, those two old cadgers, how much do you think Simpson Bowles have to drink every day?
You know what? Alcohol poisoning is a thing, okay?
they got to be beyond that. All right, hey, what is the... Explain to me, Lucy, what this Wells Fargo thing, first of all, it kind of came out of the blue. Explain what it is and explain what difference. I mean, they're not going to take, if somebody has, I mean, you can explain it from the get-go. If somebody already has a loan, they can't demand it tomorrow. They're going to let them, they said they're going to say you can't draw down anymore and you just got to, that's it, and you just pay it off now? Or what are they trying to do? Explain from the get-go.
Okay, so basically what Wells Fargo did was Wells Fargo, along with a lot of other banks, write these things that are essentially the same thing as a credit card, but it's a personal line. Okay, so it's revolving debt that you can take on. Now, of course, you know, a lot of us have a Visa or a MasterCard or a Discover or whatever in our wallets, and they're issued from different banks. But most banks also, over time, have issued essentially the same sort of thing, except that you basically write a check on it. Okay, you got a checkbook. And instead of having a plastic card, you have a checkbook. But it works exactly the same way.
It's designed,
Wells turned around and said,
it's designed for
no
you.
More draws.
But it's designed for you if you're paying 24% at Citibank. Wells is going to say, look, drag in all those cards. Here's 10 checks, and you only got to pay 15 here. Right.
Right. Essentially, the way it's marketed is a way for you to get a somewhat better rate. But it's still unsecured debt, so the rate is still very high compared to, you know, a mortgage or anything like that. But it's essentially sold as a debt consolidation tool.
Right.
That's how the banks sell it.
It's stealing the balance from other people's credit cards.
Yeah, essentially. And of course, what they all love is that you do that and then you run the card back up, right? I mean,
right.
Which is what most people do, which is really stupid, but, you know, how do you think banks make money? Off people paying interest. So what Wells has said is we're shutting all those down. Now, there's a couple of problems that ripple through the system from doing this. For the person who has it happen to them, they don't have to pay it back immediately, but they have to continue to make payments, at least the minimum, you know, monthly, like you would on a credit card, in which case you'll pay it off in the next 400 years or something like that. But the bigger problem is it will hit your FICO because a big part of your score, assuming you don't have any lates, is the percentage of your available lines that are available. Okay, in other words, if you have $20,000 worth of available credit and you've drawn down five, then you know you've used 25%, right? Well, now your available is zero, and so you've used 100%.
Is that why these people, and I never knew, you know, now the flash is going off in my brain here. Is that why they tell you never to cancel a credit card?
Well, it's the reason that they tell you not to do it unless you have to be careful with it, okay? It depends on where you are. I mean, I've got a couple of cards that have ridiculously stupid high lines that get paid off every month. If I was to kill one of those, it wouldn't do anything bad to my score. But for the average Joe that's sitting out there and is running, 30 or 40%, yeah, and he's got, you know, say two or three cards. If he kills one of those, yeah, it's probably going to whack, you know, 50 points off his FICO.
All right, so if you got three cards with a $15,000 line on all three of them and you owe five, your percentage is 1/9. But if you kill one of them, you're now your percentage becomes 15%.
Right, and the thing is that that is one of the significant determinants on your credit score.
Is how much you have...
It's the percentage of available credit that you have drawn out, yeah, on revolving lines. Yeah, so that is one of the factors that goes into it. So it is, for the people who have this happen to them, if you didn't have a lot of it drawn out and you don't have a large utilization now, it probably won't hurt you much. But for those people who are pushing the corner, my suspicion is this is going to hit them pretty good.
Well, Kyle, I got a question. This has been a while. It was my mom. This was 10, 12 years. My mom and stepfather died. Plus, I never driven that way anyway. So I found this old pickup truck in Tucson, of all places. So I fly down to Tucson, buy this old junk. Actually, it wasn't a junk. It was pretty nice. And so I drove it back. Well, I wasn't going to bring... It was like $6,000 or something. I wasn't going to bring this back before the prices went up. So I wasn't going to bring $6,000 cash. So I called the guy. I said, hey, would you take a credit card? Because I got all this room on my credit card. The guy was sure. So I pay for it on the credit card. Then I get my next bill, and my credit score had dropped from like 820 to 730. Some huge drop.
Yeah.
But I never financed it. The credit score changed between the time that I made the purchase and paid the bill. Because when I got the bill for $6,500, whatever it was, I wrote him a check for $6,500.
Right, but you hit the utilization. That's why it happened.
But I mean, I guess what I'm saying is, don't they even wait to see whether you paid it off that month?
No. The way it works, and I mean, my score is up in the stratosphere, but if I run $5,000 on my card one month because, you know, let's say I wanted my AC unit replaced or something like that, you know, so where I spend a bunch of money. If I actually wait for the statement to close, it'll take 5 points off my score.
Oh, so to stop that, I should have sent them, well, that was before you could pay online. So I would have had to, like, walk into the bank and say, here's the $6,500, put it on, like, the next day.
Before your statement closes, because that's when they report it.
Okay. So even though I paid it cash the next month, the credit card got, you know, their skirt flew up, basically.
Your skirt flew up because your utilization went up.
All right. But I guess I would have counted, at that point, it's almost like a debit card. So they never figured it that way. It was
I did that because I just did this fairly serious crossroad trip, and a week before my statement closed, I looked at the balance. I said, well, you know, I own this much, and I'm going to pay it off in another 2 weeks, so I'm going to give them the money, you know, 4 days early. And as a result, there was no, you know, 5-point dent.
Okay. Well, now it's easy to do that. It wasn't until when you used to get the bill in the mail and send them a check.
Right. The thing is that, I mean, you know, if I don't really care because I'm not turning around and going out to try to finance something, you know, next week or something like that. But for those people who get strapped that don't have the ability to do something like that and can't pay things off, it can be pretty significant, especially if you turn around and then you have to finance something.
All right. So the base of this whole mess is let's go through the, we got a couple minutes here. Let's go through the math, and we only got a couple minutes. Now, they in the article you sent, and what I think, you know, you understand pretty more than me, is it has to do with the way the Dodd-Frank and the Congress has defined these bank balance sheets. I mean, it's kind of in the same situation where I was telling you, I don't know if you knew this, but you probably wouldn't, but a few years ago when this all started, well, maybe 8 years ago, if the Clearing Corp had, say, $500 million extra at night, they almost couldn't find a bank to deposit it in because that was considered essentially hot money, and the bank had to have a bigger balance sheet, bigger equity to handle a deposit, which got me to the point, let me get this straight, banks, you can't give them money anymore, and they won't give loans. What exactly are they for? You know, but then nobody wants to hear that, right? So how, first of all, when the guy who wrote the article you sent me, he kept talking about assets. He's really talking about liabilities, right? Because a deposit is a liability for a bank, not an asset.
Correct.
So if you can, work through that. Why is this a, a problem? Why are having these line of credits out there? Why is this a problem for the bank?
Well, I'm not exactly sure why it's a problem for Wells, but my suspicion is that this goes to credit quality and the unsecured portion of their lending book. And Wells is under a great deal of scrutiny and has been for a long time because of all the BS that they've pulled over the last, 15, 20 years. Remember, these are the guys that got caught opening accounts for senior citizens all over Florida that didn't actually open them.
Right.
And they were doing it because their branch managers and their tellers were getting paid bonuses based on account growth rates. So, I mean, there's, and by the way, that's called fraud in the, in the real world, but nobody goes to jail in the corporate world in America anymore. So, we didn't actually punish anybody for that. We just fined people. And they were heavily involved in the 2006, 2007 escalation with liar loans and everything else that blew up in everybody's face. And so exactly how much of this is local to Wells, I don't know. And that's the challenge, is that my suspicion is that this is a local situation within Wells as a company. And there's something about their specifics within their balance sheet and its composition that they were getting into trouble with meeting the Federal Reserve's requirements for reserves. And so the way to stop that is to shut this down. And if they're not making, if this is not a more profitable thing, in other words, if they can redirect people into credit cards and have a couple points higher interest rate, well, then from their standpoint, it's a good business decision.
Well, that's probably true. Well, you made a better deal for people to do it. It's a worse deal for them if you pull it back from them, right?
Right, exactly. I mean, but this will hit some people. Some percentage of the people that get hit by this are doing this because this is how they have kept their head above water. And when you get hit like this, your financing costs go up, because if you're in that corner and your FICO score goes down by 50 or 100 points, then your options for finding somewhere else to float that money all of a sudden got a lot more expensive.
Well, you might not be able to get a mortgage.
Well, that's right. And you might find yourself that, now you're in a subprime credit card at, 28%.
Yeah, you don't want to be there. Carl, thank you very much, buddy. Have a nice weekend. SP Futures up 18. Actually, NASDAQ's down 9 now, so we've leaked a little in the NASDAQ. Back on Monday, Stocks and Jocks.
You're still here? It's over. Go home. Go.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to PTISecurities.com. PTI ProDirect. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at PTIProDirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit Nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. Dax Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.